Welcome into Tuesday's edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas. Lots of people joining me today. Stevie Nicol will be here. We'll be discovering more about Daisy the Cat. Plus, he'll be responding to the throw-in coach who was not very complimentary about Stevie and his dinosaur ways. Meanwhile, Craig Burley will be here as we'll be reflecting on the top 50 worst Premier League signings ever. Also, Gab, turning back the clock to 2002, would you believe? It was that long ago when Inter blew the title on the final day of the season. We start, though, as we always do, by taking a look at how the coronavirus is being tackled in football around the world. Starting off with the positive news that it looks like the German government had to meet on Wednesday and is expected to allow the Bundesliga season to resume on May the 15th. Things aren't, though, as clear in England. The PFA chief executive, now he's of course a representative of the players, Gordon Taylor, saying that the Premier League considering shorter matches, neutral stadiums and more substitutions. The EFL chairman, now he's in charge of the leagues below the Premier League, Rick Parry, saying failure to honour Premier League promotion and relegation will lead to very messy legal action. OK, let's welcome, shall we, Ian Dark and Gab Marcotti into the show. Gab, I feel like every single day I go to you with another idea the Premier League are looking at, the latest being shortening the halves from 45 minutes.
Yeah, well, the other two, the Gordon Taylor, the head of the players' union, the PFA, you were already familiar with, right? The five substitutions and playing in neutral venue, which actually isn't a Premier League idea. It comes from the police force and law enforcement here in England, and which isn't really an idea. It's fact because they said if you don't do this, we're not going ahead. But what you're seeing right now is how different this whole situation is being dealt with in England relative to, say, Germany or Spain. Now, in Germany and Spain, there is a face of the league, Javier Tebas in Spain, Christian Seifer in Germany. These guys have been out in public for the past 6 weeks. They've answered questions. Their debate's been very, very open. In England, for a number of different reasons, the Premier League has decided to take a different approach. They've had fewer meetings. They've had more sort of behind-the-scenes discussions. There is no face of the Premier League like Seifer or Tebas to come out and answer questions or to speak in public about what the plans are. And so the information that's come out, it's come out in drips and drabs. Some of it has been wrong. Some of it might have been early proposals that have since been abandoned. Like, remember back when they were going to lock them all up at St. George's Park? Some of this, I'm sure somebody maybe has brought up this 45-minute thing. Although I think it's also interesting to note that Gordon Taylor and the players haven't really been part of this discussion. They fell out badly with the Premier League. It's been, 3-4 weeks ago now, when they refused to take 30% across the board temporary pay cuts. And since then, they haven't really been involved. So again, this is information that's feeding back to them. It's a little bit like a game of telephone right now. A lot of rumor, but very little fact in terms of what the Premier League as a whole is actually plans on doing.
Ian, what do you make of this all?
Well, I think it's a mess, as Gab's just described. I think where we are now, I don't think this 45-minute or cutting the duration of the game has got a hope in hell of actually happening. They can't rip up the laws of football. So I think that is, frankly, a daft even suggestion to be talking about. The neutral grounds, I think that's pretty much set in stone. It has to be that way. They don't want they don't think they can produce 20 biosecure stadiums. So I think where we are now is there's a big problem because the teams at the bottom of the table, and remember, if only seven clubs don't agree to this and the players say no, then it all falls down. Now, the clubs at the bottom do not want to be relegated from a competition that is vastly different from the one that they started, and they regard neutral grounds as part of that vastly different landscape. The other problem, of course, is there's been talk of no relegation. The teams at the bottom, of course, would love that, but the TV companies wouldn't. They want a proper competition, not a lot of dead rubbers. So there's a lot to sort out. The players, I think there will be big meetings this coming week in the next few days where the medical protocols will be put to them and they will be asked to agree that it is safe enough for them to play. It can't be completely safe, of course, until there's a vaccine.
As we talk now, Gab, gut instinct, how will it be resolved?
And my gut instinct tends to change from day to day. I think it's good that they're finally talking about actual medical protocols. Again, medical protocols have been out there in the public domain in Spain, Italy, and Germany for 3-4 weeks now. This is one of the first things. And obviously it's going to change with the science, but this is one of the first things that you should put out there so that people can debate it and people can get comfortable with it one way or another. My instinct is that I think in the end they're going to work out some form of compensation, which can either mean more promotions, no relegations, but then you still have promotions from the Football League, or some sort of economic compensation to the teams that are slighted, whether it's Championship teams not being promoted or Premier League teams being relegated. But guess what, Dan? This is purely a hunch.
Yeah, this is it. Obviously, is a hunch. Ian, if they came to you and asked you how you would fix it, would you answer the phone? What would you say?
No, I'd pick up the phone, and if you want to cut through all the verbiage here about this, and there's a lot of it, I think they will sort it out. I think there's a big imperative financially to get this league completed, and I reckon that the league will start on June the 12th.
Restart, meanwhile. That is. Meanwhile, Gab, it's going to happen, isn't it? The Bundesliga is going to start next week. This is genuinely exciting news.
That's the indication. I mean, Reuters coming out and reporting that Angela Merkel will say yes tomorrow. Now, just for those, so you can give you a peek behind the curtain, like, if a massive international wire service like Reuters comes out and says this, then it's because somebody in government has briefed them and told them, yeah, this is what Chancellor Merkel will say tomorrow. It's not like they've spoken to her or they've read her mind. So until it happens, you know, I'm keeping the champagne on ice, but certainly it's a very, very positive mood. And I think it's something that's going to be very useful to other leagues as they try to see if they can come back, because, you know, Germany in some ways can offer a bit of a blueprint or a roadmap of some of the hurdles, maybe some of the unexpected hurdles that you're going to have to deal with.
Imagine real life football to talk about. Gents, thank you very much. Of course, England a long way off that stage at the moment. And for more on what's going on in the Premier League and their plan to return, check out Mark Ogden's article over on the website.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride, from the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Plenty of content over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to subscribe. One of the most popular videos of the year came after our review after Liverpool won away against Wolves. Their second goal, of course, coming from a throw-in. Here's what ensued.
I think the positive thing as well, and our club would be very happy, and Thomas Grønmark as well, the throw-in coach, is that our second goal comes from a move that they probably worked a lot on at training, the movement of Firmino and Salah on that long throw-in by Alexander-Arnold, and then they get a bit lucky maybe with the way Dendonca cleared that ball or half-cleared that ball, and then Henderson slots it to Firmino. But it's, you know, you have a throw-in coach. You're the only team in Europe, in those big clubs, to have a throw-in coach. And on a game like this, where you're not really playing well, where you're struggling, then you pull out one of those moves that you work on at training, and I think that's even more satisfying.
Oh, you got him going, Jules. You got him going.
Throw in coach.
There he is.
Oh, no. Hold on a second. Oh, no.
You got a big one.
Oh, no, it's down. Because it came from a throw in, it's well done, the throw in coach. Because you know what? We didn't have a throw in coach. That would never have happened. Can you
Why
tell me?
Why did they have a throw in coach in the start then, if according to you, it's useless?
Okay. So when you're looking for a throw in coach, what qualifications do you need?
But the guy is a scientific. The guy has worked this...
Scientific.
You know, this is not just someone they picked out in the street.
But why does it matter? It just annoys me.
I think the positive thing as well, and our club would be very happy, and Thomas Grønmark as well, the throw-in coach, is that that second goal comes from a move that they probably worked a lot on at training, the movement of Firmino and Salah on that long throw-in by Alexander-Arnold, and then they get a bit lucky maybe with the way Dendoncker cleared that ball or half-cleared that ball, and then Henderson slots it to Firmino. But it's, you know, you have a throw-in coach. You're the only team in Europe, in those big clubs, to have a throw-in coach. And on a game like this, where you're not really playing well, where you're struggling, then you pull out one of those moves that you work on at training, and I think that's even more satisfying.
Oh, you got him going, Jules. You got him going.
Throw-in coach.
Oh, there he is.
Oh, no. Hold on a second. Oh, no.
We got a big one.
Oh, no, it's down. Because it came from a throw-in, it's well done, the throw-in coach. Because you know what? We didn't have a throw-in coach. That would never have happened. Can you
Why
tell me?
Why did they have a throw-in coach in the start then, if according to you, it's useless?
Okay. So when you're looking for a throw-in coach, what qualifications do you need?
But the guy is a scientific. The guy has worked this...
Scientific.
You know, this is not just someone they picked out in the street.
But why does it matter? It just annoys me.
And it's been a running theme since. Stevie Nicol with us, as is Craig Burley. Now, it's the first time we've really heard from Liverpool throwing coach talking about Stevie. This was Thomas Grønmark's comments earlier this week.
I'll say, first of all, a guy like Stig Nicol or Andy Gray, who also did it earlier, it's really clear for me to see that they have no knowledge around throw-ins. And it's also clear for me to see that they're like stuck in the football world like 30 or 40 years ago, where we were drinking like 10 pints the night before we had to play, and where we didn't do any specific. Of course, they had passion at that time, but there are not all, but there are some old players who haven't really been following, you know, the modern football. And for me, it's okay. I think the fans and social media have answered for me, because a lot of people are calling them like outdated dinosaurs. I think I don't have the need to call them that.
Stevie, your response.
Do you know what? There's a saying, BS baffles brains. I'm telling you, he's actually just said that what we were doing 30 years ago, the game's moved on. What an absolute lot of nonsense, the game's moved on. Listen, I've spoken to players that have been in his sessions on the field. I've spoken to players that have been in his video sessions, sat for 40 minutes, and there wasn't one thing they said that they hadn't already been told. Listen, yes, I'm sure this guy can teach a player to throw it harder or throw it longer with some technique. But the stuff about moves, I mean, it's the same. It's been the same for years. And this nonsense that people talk about, well, the game's moved on. Well, let me give you an example. The game's moved on in terms of fullbacks, for example. Now, when I played, and certainly when I coached, a huge part of a footballer's responsibility was to cover his centre-back. That's not the case anymore. That's when you can say the game has moved on, because it's completely different. Throw-ins aren't any different. Yes, this guy can make you throw it longer or faster. Yeah, I can see that. And if you've got the money to splash out on a throw-in coach, then good luck to you on you go. But don't tell me he's doing anything that we weren't trying to do 30 years ago. I'm sorry. Not having it.
I love this. This is great. Craig?
I'm not getting involved. He can take the flak again. Listen, you've wasted his day. You don't understand. You've spoiled his day. This is a man who, by lunchtime today, had shot his course record at the golf course, a 74. 2 weeks ago, it was never been thought of. He was smashing it around here, there and everywhere. He was in the doldrums. Today, he got the pick-me-up of his life, with the round of his life. He gets home, and the goalie coach has upset him again. I mean, what a day. What a spoiler that's been. But listen, on the other side of the coin, you know, obviously the guy's needled a little bit if anybody criticises him. I haven't got an issue. If Jurgen Klopp, as I said at the time, if Jurgen Klopp wants to bring a guy in and sees fit to do so, then fine. But please don't use social media as a guideline for, well, the fans have sorted it out and social media have answered them, because social media is not a platform for sensible conversation in the most. It's full of boneheads for the most that just want to get on and shout at former players who maybe have an opinion, like Stevie is. He's entitled to his opinion, and people just have to get on with it.
You know, Dan, let's be honest here. What has he really changed? He hasn't been changing anything. As I said before, it's the same stuff that was happening 25, 30 years ago. As far as patterns are concerned, no different.
I have to say, I would like to sit in one of these sessions. I would like to listen to see if there was something that you could learn from what you used to do as a player. And I would be intrigued to know the specifics of what he does. I mean, obviously, throwing the ball, but you know, the movement and offensive play, the deep defensive shape against throw-ins and all that kind of stuff. And I would like to see the specifics of it, because we've all sat, and Stevie mentioned it at the start, we have all sat with coaches of all sorts, you know, defenders, ex-strikers, ex-midfielders, whatever it is, and they'll talk through sessions or talk through what they want, and senior players can look at it and sniff it out and say, hold on a minute, that's just nonsense. I'm not saying it is, but I would like to sit through a briefing or a meeting or watch it in person and say, right, show me what this brings to the team, show me how this works, and show me how it makes me better. And I think maybe if we understood a bit more of that, we would have a better understanding around it. But as I said, if Klopp sees fit to bring him in, I never have had an issue with it, but I would like to see the specifics of just how it helps Liverpool and gets them onto the front foot.
I would suggest that the main thing it does, you know, bringing this guy in every so often, I think what it'll do, it'll concentrate the player's mind that throw-ins are important. You know, some players don't understand how important it is. It should be regarded as no different than a pass. But I think a lot of players don't concentrate on it enough. And if this guy coming in makes them concentrate, then that's fine. But just don't try and sell us some sort of revolution that's going on, that's all.
Would you like us to set up a Zoom meeting with you and him, Stevie? Maybe you could sit through one of his classes?
No, I'd rather be sat right next to him and listen to it myself with my own ears. So I'm nice and close.
But I tell you what, Dan, it is an important part of the game in general, because as Stevie would tell you, we used to do this throw-in thing with Scotland with Craig Brown when he was there, and we used to do this sort of same crossover thing many, many times, and it's a bit like the set pieces we used to work on with Scotland. None of them ever worked, but maybe that was just down to us. I don't know.
Oh dear. Meanwhile, of course, yesterday Stevie went viral considering what happened during us recording the show. Craig, I don't know if you've seen it. Let's show it again. Here it is. You agree, Stevie?
100%.
The cat
Listen,
doesn't.
If you think, you know, Diddy him... Sorry?
Go on, Steve.
Wait, Stevie.
What?
Is it on your lap?
That was perfect.
Hold on.
That timing was perfect.
Where's the bloody cat?
Can you come and get the cat, please?
Oh, mate, the timing was perfect.
We couldn't have staged that any better. Stevie, where is the cat now? The people want to know.
Upstairs behind it's behind the door. That's where it is. And it's staying there till we're finished.
You couldn't hear any of that, no, because you had your headphones on.
Yeah, because I've got these plugged into my phone, so I couldn't hear Daisy meowing. And all I could hear was you two laughing. I'm thinking, I mean, it's not unusual for you two to laugh at me, particularly you, Dan, but I couldn't quite understand what was going on. Eventually I got it, though.
Craig, you're not a cat person, though.
No, and bearing in mind the history he's had with that cat it can, and I've been around his house, I'm frightened of that bloody cat. It can get a little bit aggressive. Now, when it was, and the best one was one of the lads behind the scenes in the background, one of our colleagues, you can hear him saying, "Is it sat on your lap, Stevie?" As if he's going to do a TV show, stroking a cat with a cat on his lap. So, yeah. I mean, I'm not. I have to say, as you know,
yeah, get
I'm
the cat.
I'm not a huge fan of cats.
Talk to me. So this is Daisy the cat, who once, when your dogs were fighting, Stevie, your wife tried to separate them, and the cat decided to get involved by biting your wife.
The cat went for Eleanor. The two dogs. By the way, these two dogs are over 100 pounds. So when they're fighting, let me tell you, this is some scrap. And the cat, when they started, was sat right next to my wife. And the dogs are right next to her as well. And it just turned round and bit her right in the back of the leg, then did a... just ran away. Cheers. That's what it does for fun. Oh, it bites you.
It's the best contribution you've made, really, Stevie, for quite a long time. Thank you very much to the boys. Just a reminder, Extra Time today features Shaka and Frank. Be sure to check that out over on our YouTube channel. Meanwhile, over on the website, Bill Barnwell was given the task of naming the worst 50 Premier League transfers in history. It's detailed, it's there for you to enjoy. We've just picked some of the big names there, as Craig is still with us. Welcome back, Ian Dark. Because, Ian, maybe some people aren't familiar with number one and Ali Dia. Just tell us the story.
It's a hilarious story. This was a guy whose last club was Blyth Spartans, a non-league club, but he claimed to be a nephew of the World Footballer of the Year, George Weah. Now, for some reason, he got signed or conned his way into getting a month's contract with Southampton. And the story gets even more fantastical because he's actually brought on in a Premier League game for a few minutes. And he has to be substituted very, very quickly because it's very, very embarrassing. Graham Souness was the manager at the time, and somehow I think the signing had gone on behind his back and everything had been taken on trust. And I remember Matt Letizia saying about this guy, he said, when he trained with us, I thought he was a member of the public who'd won a reality TV contest to have a go big. A professional footballer. So how this guy got to play in the Premier League is a wonderful story.
It's 100% true as well. It's an incredible tale that really you couldn't make up. Meanwhile, Craig, you take a look at the other 49. Which one stood out for you in particular?
Well, let me just go back slightly because a little caveat to that story, to that transfer. How the hell he slipped through the net at Southampton and managed to get a contract, as Ian said, is baffling. But I can tell you, before he went to Southampton, I don't know how many other clubs he was at, but he was at Chelsea. He came to train with us when I was there. And the reason he came to train with us is because he said he was George Weah's cousin, and Glenn Hoddle, our manager at the time, had played with George Weah at Monaco, I believe, if my story's correct. So he managed to wangle his way in. So Glenn said, oh, yeah, okay, I'll do George a favour. In you come, he can train with us. And a bit like what Matt Letizia said at Southampton, as soon as this guy got on the training field, we all went, hold on a minute, something's not right. And Glenn and Peter Shreve sussed it straight away and thought, nah, something not right here. So they got rid of him, and he somehow managed to find his way down to the south coast, and for some reason somebody decided to sign him. It was quite incredible because I saw the guy on the training field, and it was like seeing a very, very bad Sunday league footballer who was struggling to get a game.
It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. What about others from the list, Ian? Who else stands out for you?
Definitely Winston Bohada. This is a guy Chelsea signed from Barcelona, but they changed managers. I think Bialy had signed him, and then Ranieri became the manager. The deal had been done sort of without Bialy even knowing, and he just didn't fit in. But he was on this great contract of £40,000 a week that was going to pay him £15 million over 4 years, and he basically just refused to be transferred. So he carried on turning up every day, doing the training, never getting selected, often with the youth team, sometimes training on his own and picking up £40,000 a week. And he was like the forgotten man of the Premier League. This was a guy who'd played for the Netherlands in a European Championship and a World Cup as well, but it all went wrong, and he didn't care. He was just going to bank the money.
Have you been at the Derek Ray School of Pronunciation, Ian? What did you call him there, Winston?
Bohada, wasn't it? That's how I think we said it. Yeah, Bohada. What are you going to say?
Is it not Winston Bogart?
Yeah, you can call him that. Like Humphrey. Sounds better. Go on. Yeah, that's fine.
Sorry, bloody commentators, Dan. What have I told you about these commentators?
Obviously, maybe, never mind how you say his name, not many people have heard of him. Others, obviously, more prominent, Balotelli, Shevchenko, Bebe there as well.
What do you mean nobody's heard of Winston Bogaard? Played for the Netherlands.
Well, yes, I know that, but not at Chelsea they hadn't, did they? We just heard that he was a mercenary just taking the money.
Now.
Meanwhile, away from him, all the big names as well, Shevchenko, Balotelli, Bebe, high profile. Anyone in particular stand out for you, Craig?
Bebe's in there, Balotelli's in there. You mentioned, I know Ian probably wants to talk about Massimo Taibbi. Balotelli's a bit of an easy target, hasn't he? Because he's a super talented player and it hasn't worked out for many clubs. Shevchenko was he was past that super duper striker of Milan by the time he got to Chelsea, so that's kind of understandable, but he certainly wasn't a lot of these guys were not flops as players, but possibly, as you say, these particular transfers didn't work out.
Ian, last word on this from you.
Well, I think Craig's right. We've got to give Massimo Taibbi a go because it shows that even Sir Alex Ferguson can make mistakes in the transfer market, because they had Mark Bosnich in goal that season. He lost the form. I think it was an injury as well. So this guy, Taibbi, who had a string of Italian clubs, had to play. And there was this game against Southampton at Old Trafford, which ended in a 3-3 draw. And Matt Letizia must have had a shot that travelled at precisely 1 mile an hour from 20 yards out, which he somehow managed to let slither under his body and kept his place for the next game. They went to Arsenal. He played again. They lost 5-0. He never played after that.
Wow. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Just a reminder, ESPN FC are back on your screens tomorrow. Be sure to join us.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Napa know-how.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa. Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping on over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $50 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
18 years ago to the very day, we saw one of the most dramatic endings in the history of Serie A. Just a reminder, this is what the table looked like going into the final round of matches. Inter Milan top. A win away against Lazio would see them crowned champions. Gab Marcotti with us. Gab, what happened?
Well, really was one of the most unbelievable finishes, I think, in the history of Serie A. Everybody took it for granted that Inter were going to win away to Lazio for really a whole number of reasons, starting with the fact that, you know, the Lazio and Inter fans were twinned, given with the fact that Roma still had a chance to win. And so obviously Lazio didn't, whatever they wanted, just certainly didn't want Roma to go and win the title. And instead it didn't quite go according to plan, despite an auspicious start with Inter, them taking the lead with some defensive mistakes from Lazio, I might add, taking the lead twice, and then Karol Poborski twice scoring for Lazio, first to make it 1-1 and then to make it 2-2 just before halftime. Now, just to add to the whole surreal nature of this, Karol Poborski was his last game in a Lazio shirt. He knew he was leaving. He was terrible during his time at Lazio. And he decides to put in the effort on that final day. Inter made some colossal mistakes defensively. Vratislav Gresko, of course, is the guy who got scapegoated. But he's not the only one. There's a lot of people there who certainly screwed things up. And then in the second half, Lazio came and scored twice to go on and win 4-2. Ronaldo, this was an Inter team, remember, with Ronaldo, with Christian Vieri, with Clarence Seedorf. They were totally stacked with talent. Ronaldo was substituted in the second half. The final scenes of the game see him absolutely sobbing on the bench. Juventus won 2-0 at Udinese, wrapped it up early. And then Roma ended up jumping ahead of Inter as well, driving Inter into third place. It was completely surreal. The explanation that a lot of people gave in the end was that Lazio, most of all, didn't want Roma to win the title. They were pretty confident that Juve didn't win. They really didn't care who won as long as Roma didn't win. And once Juve took that commanding lead away to Udinese, Lazio figured, okay, well, we sort of played around in the first half. Now let's go and let's get serious in the second half and let's beat these guys, since we know there's no way that Roma can win the title. And that's what they did. It was just one of many dramatic collapses that Inter have given their fans over the years.
Yeah, certainly, though, surely very near the top of the list. Gab Marcotti, thank you very much. Thank you very much also to Stevie and to Craig and to Ian Dark as well. Just a reminder, more from us tomorrow. Until then, goodbye. Welcome into Extra Time. Thank you very much for your tweets. Frank LaBeouf and Shaka Hislop with me to answer some of your questions. The first one is for you, Shaq, and it says, what went through your head when facing a penalty? How did you decide when and where to dive?
Well, most penalty takers have a favoured side, and you get to know them, get to know their preferences. The trick to it is, if you go too early, they can just switch up and put it the other side. If you leave it too late, you don't give yourself much of a chance. So you're trying to time it just at that point where they commit to their favoured side, but somehow give yourself enough of a chance to get there.
Frank, you say penalties occasionally, didn't you?
I shot a lot of penalties, and what I was doing is picking a side. I'm not playing with the goalkeepers. I think it's a kind of a respect as well, and the goal is to score, is not to play with the goalkeeper. And I think recently I've seen so many players waiting for the goalkeeper to dive before choosing the side. I was choosing the side, and Johan Niskens, a famous Dutch player, advised me to do so as well when he came to Stamford Bridge. But I always thought that shooting strong on the grass, very low and very very strongly, will be the key to score a penalty.
We have a Panenka, Jack.
No. The only person I know who did it was Dwight York. And at the point where he was doing it and doing it really well, I remember we played against them, and I told him, listen, if you all got the penalty, just don't chip me. Whatever you do, just don't chip me. And saying that, yeah, I was playing for Newcastle. He was still at Villa at the time. I got a hand to it, saved it, but somebody scored the rebound, I think, on the follow-up. So at least I didn't get chipped. That's what good friends are for.
Frank, was it a mistake? Was it a mistake for Barcelona to sign Griezmann when they could have waited and re-signed Neymar?
Oh, that's a tough question. I think it was a mistake for Griezmann to sign for Barcelona, because the way he plays, the side that he used to play, is mostly where Messi is playing. So I guess it was a mistake for Barcelona, because especially that Neymar wants to come back to Paris Saint-Germain, if it's really the case. They fit very well with Messi, and he seemed to very enjoy his game when he was at Barcelona, which is maybe less the case in Paris Saint-Germain. So I guess, yeah, from Barca was a mistake, but boy, they made lots of money. I don't know how much they're going to spend to get him back. They spent lots of money for Griezmann. I don't know how much they're going to get if he leaves. We'll see at the end of the day if it was a good bargain or not. But yeah, I think, footballistic talking, I think it was a mistake from Barcelona, yeah.
Meanwhile, Frank, what's your favourite Champions League comeback in the knockout stages that you've ever witnessed?
I think it's the Barcelona Paris Saint-Germain, like maybe 4 years ago, the remontada. I think it was absolutely fantastic when I think Paris Saint-Germain won 4-0, something like that, against Barcelona, and Barcelona won 6-1 in the second leg, and that was crazy. Neymar at the time was playing for Barcelona. He was a real instrument of the revenge of Barcelona at that day. That was a crazy game. Nobody believed that Barcelona would be able to come back and beat Paris Saint-Germain that way. And I think it was a real trauma for the Paris Saint-Germain players, and it's still, for some players, a big trauma. Mm.
For you, Shaq?
Istanbul 2007. And listen, I understand exactly what Frank is saying, but that was over 118 minutes. And in the final in 2007, Liverpool had 45 minutes to do it.
Shaq.
And this was against one of those great AC Milan teams. That was the most unlikely, the most exciting of comebacks I think the Champions League era has seen.
2005, Shaka. That's right.
2005. All right, I was close.
Frank, how would you characterize Zidane in the dressing room? Quiet or vocal?
Oh no, very quiet. Very quiet. The vocal was Didier Deschamps. A little bit less Laurent Blanc, and after Marcel Desailly. But Zizou never talked, or barely talked. He was a very quiet person. He was next to his best mate, Christophe Dugarry. So Christophe Dugarry was saying jokes, and Zizou was just laughing at it. But he never took the decision to talk with anybody. He was just listening and getting ready for his fantastic game.
This next question is for Frank, but I'm going to ask Shaka it because I'm intrigued to see what Shaka's answer will be. Okay? Frank, would you trade in your World Cup winner's medal to win an Academy Award? Ooh. Shaka, what do you think his answer will be?
I think Frank's answer will be no. I think he will keep hold of that World Cup medal forever, and nothing would pry it away from him.
That will be no, because I always thought about the collective aspect of the game, and also in movies, I don't think somebody can be treated as the best actor without a fantastic script and many people working very hard, like the director, the editor, of course the person who wrote.
You start playing the music
now. So you have to. No, but you have to accept the fact that you're not alone, and I will never trade my World Cup medal with all my teammates for Best Actor Academy Awards, and not even for the best movie, for nothing. I will never trade it. So leave me alone with that, please.
Good answer, Frank.
Final, we know what Stevie's answer to this is. What was your favourite pre-match meal, Shaka? Shepherd's pie?
No. I was a tuna pasta bake kind of guy. It was my go-to every single time.
Frank?
Sirloin with rice and pasta. That was fantastic.
Perfect. Good stuff. All right, guys, thank you very much. Just a reminder, ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. Be sure to join us.